Hello, I'm Trey Marone, and welcome to the West Virginia EduCast. On today's program, we have the privilege to speak with Superintendent Dr. Deborah Akers. For the past 47 years, Dr. Akers has been involved in the Mercer County school system, with 42 years of that being in administration, and the last 29 years serving as the superintendent. She began her career in education as an elementary teacher back in 1974, and in 1980 became the coordinator of in-service and continuing education and elementary supervisor at the Mercer County School Central Office. From there, she held various positions within the system, including coordinator of planning, research and evaluation, personnel director, assistant superintendent, and interim superintendent. In 1993, Dr. Akers became the superintendent of Mercer County Schools. She was the first woman to hold this chief executive officer title in the southern tier of West Virginia counties. In addition, Dr. Akers has served as an adjunct professor for Marshall University, West Virginia University, West Virginia College of Graduate Studies, Bluefield State College, Concord College, and Bluefield College. As a lifelong educator and a trailblazer in what was, at the time, a very male-dominated field, Dr. Akers is going to talk to us about how she has seen education evolve in her county and in our state, and the challenges she has faced along the way. Welcome to the program, Dr. Akers.
Thank you. Thank you, Trey, for inviting me. Listening to the podcast produced so far, I found them to be very informative. And I want to thank you and Bowles Rice for making this line of communication available. I think it's an excellent way for us to communicate with one another.
Well, thank you very much. We're really hoping this has been an exciting adventure for us, and you've been on our radar as a guest even before you announced your retirement. So we're so thankful to have you here today. Let's just jump right in, Dr. Akers. I wanted to just start off with what initially led you into the field of education.
Well, I was that kid that loved going to school. I enjoyed learning, but to be really honest about it, I really love the social aspect, the clubs, the ball games, all the extracurricular activities. So I guess I just wanted to continue to do that all my life. I also worked as an aide in a summer program for elementary children the year that I graduated. I can't remember the name of that, but it would be similar to some of the summer programs that are out there today. And with that experience that summer, I decided that pursuing a career in education was the right thing for me to do.
I can relate to that. I kind of feel myself, I've been drawn to education. And I think when I finally settled into education law, it was just a hand in glove fit for me. I really think I finally found my niche too. And like you, I was always drawn to education throughout my life. I'd gone back to school or went back and got a teaching certificate after I got my law degree, and just kept going back. So I can definitely relate to that. You started out in education. You mentioned a few things you did, and then, of course, you were a classroom teacher. But at one point, you decided to leave the classroom and pursue other roles in administration. Could you talk about what led you to make that decision?
Well, that was, I sort of entered educational administration through a different approach. I didn't start out that way. When I finished my master's degree, my master's degree was in administration, and going through it, I thought I wanted to be a school principal. But after I finished it, I was able to obtain a part-time job at Bluefield College in their teacher education program. That was at night, in addition to what I was doing teaching during the day. And I really enjoyed working with prospective teachers. So I began taking classes at Virginia Tech, and my goal at that point was hoping to complete my doctorate. And of course, I was going to look at curriculum and instruction because I wanted to teach at the college level. But as things worked out during my coursework, I moved into the position of elementary supervisor with Mercer County. I was able to do an internship with the county, and I guess that opened that door for me to get into the county office. And from that position as elementary supervisor, then I just kept on moving up the ladder, so to speak.
Well, I can kind of see and feel how that probably evolved as well. You know, having been in the education system a little bit myself, it's usually pretty apparent those individuals who are not only looking to be a teacher, but they love the profession. And you can see that in the pride that they take in their work and the interest they take in the overall success. And it sounds like from what you're saying that was kind of what was evolving maybe in the early years, and probably was apparent to those people around you, like, hey, look, let's look at her, look at, see how she's doing here and how she's helping our school system. But, you know, you've been in the school system many, many, many years, and I know you've faced so many challenges over your career. And it may be a tough question to ask, but I'd like for you to tell us about the biggest challenge you've seen education face during the course of your career.
I think the biggest challenge that we faced in education has been the accountability measures that have been implemented. First with the REC decision, and then the additional accountability through No Child Left Behind. The emphasis on accountability certainly has changed the way that school systems operate. It's impacted the classroom and generally has impacted the overall environment of the school experience. Looking at what school was about and our emphasis and the freedom that sometimes people felt in the classroom prior to all of the accountability, and now the pressure that teachers relay to me that they have about test results and all, I think that has been the biggest overriding change and challenge for educators throughout my career.
You know, that REC decision, of course, to those of us in education, that's very important and certainly significant decision that came down many years ago. Can you just give a couple of examples, or just an example of, you know, what it was like before the REC decision, kind of example of things versus after the REC decision came out? And I know that was focused on finances primarily, but what was the difference that you saw transpire during that time?
Well, I think the biggest difference that the way I've thought about it is, before, when you had accountability measures, those were through North Central and some of those organizations, the emphasis was on what you had, what was in the, you know, the number of books in the library, it was on counting things. But after all of that, then it became the process. You know, the emphasis was on students, not on what you had in the building, so to speak. So it put a lot more pressure, and has remained to put pressure on administrators, teachers, and everyone on student performance and teacher performance and administrators' performance and being able to achieve those goals. So I think that that's the biggest difference. The other thing I didn't mention too, I think it's been very important too, is the safety aspect. Mm-hmm. After Columbine, you know, the way that we look at things and the decisions we make as far as taking kids out of school and the safety precautions, that's made a huge difference in schools too.
Well, I do think about that at times, you know, the changes that have evolved since, you know, I was with school in Wayne County, West Virginia, and, you know, and I think about open campuses, and we all ran to lunch as quick as we could. You know, people walked in and out of the schools at will. There was very little, you know, accountability as far as that goes, to where now, you know, I think the term is a man trap. I mean, you know, when you have the safety nets at the out, you know, schools, and all the doors are locked and everything, and just the changes that have occurred in from a safety standpoint in our school system has been pretty amazing, even through my lifetime. But, you know, that is a significant change, just the way you operate the school. You know, the accountability measures and the safety measures are both obviously very important to the success of the school system. And, you know, you've seen some very, very significant changes in those areas. You know, as the first woman to hold the chief executive officer title in the school system in the southern tier of West Virginia counties, what limitations or barriers did you face becoming a leader in what was at the time a male-dominated field? And how did you overcome those?
Well, I'm probably going to give you an answer here that you're not expecting. I don't believe there were barriers that went across an entire group or segment of the population. Certainly, there are always individuals that have certain beliefs that may serve to place a limitation on someone or create a barrier for someone. But, I didn't find this to be across the board with any group. Maybe I answer this question this way because of my own personal philosophy. I've always believed that if you're not successful at something, then the first place you look is within. You don't look outside to see who may have caused you a problem. Could I be prepared? Did I know enough about the subject? What could I have done differently? And I think perhaps in the beginning, my own lack of confidence led me to dig in really into the details and become as knowledgeable as I could about certain areas that I was dealing with. And one that I will mention that was, and I love it now, but at the time when I became superintendent, we were just beginning a new school building. My husband and I built our own house. So, I wasn't completely foreign to construction, but not on the level of building a new school, but working with the construction people and feeling like I had something to say that was worthwhile. I pushed myself to learn the business. I guess it could have been a barrier, but I think that making myself knowledgeable prevented that from happening. So, looking back, I don't see that there's been any specific group or that there's been any specific barrier. I think there could have been if I didn't have the personality that I have. I am pretty detail oriented, and I don't like not knowing what's going on. So I push myself to learn that.
Well, so what I took away from that, which was a very valuable, I think, point of instruction is when you feel that maybe you hit a wall or a barrier of some sort might exist, that the first thing to look at is yourself. Don't try to figure out why from the outside. Hey, is it because I'm a female? Is it because the color of my skin? Don't immediately look at those issues. Look within and say, hey, is there something else I can be doing here that I can do better, that I can make myself better? You indicated your lack of confidence has driven you to dig deeper and to work harder and to make yourself, a better candidate or applicant, I guess, if that's the situation you'd be in, but to be successful. And you look within to see what you can do to make yourself better, to poise yourself to be more successful. Is that?
Yes, you've summarized that very well. I think, and I will tell you that as I interview potential administrators today, I will always look for if that person is able to take constructive criticism, if that person is able to look at how they can improve themselves based upon the experiences that they have. I think that's a valuable lesson for us all to learn, because I've always thought that if you're going to be in education, that you have to believe. You have to believe that it's important that you continue to grow educationally. You can't stop learning.
Yeah.
And if I'm in education and I think I'm done when I finish my master's degree, for example, with learning, then I'm not an educator. I mean, that doesn't make much sense. So
that's a great point. And, the more we've talked, on the level in talking about this podcast and just on these issues, I find more and more that we're a lot more alike than I probably do. I'm the same way. I mean, no matter what the challenges that faces me, I never think about, oh my goodness, I've been discriminated against or somebody's treating me differently because of, at this point, I might even say my age, but because I'm getting up there, but I've never been that guy. I've always dug deeper and work harder and try to figure out a way to be better. I never feel like I've arrived. I always feel like there's so many things that I could do better. So I can, and it probably, I think the point I was trying to share with you there is that if I was, out front about it, it would be lack of confidence too, because I feel like that there's something I could be doing better and should be doing better. So like I said, the more we talk, the more I realize that we think a lot alike on some things here. So I know that you didn't really feel that you were facing a barrier as a woman in a male-dominated field at the time. And that's factual. I mean, I'm not, trying to create that. It was factual that it was a male-dominated field in county superintendencies. But even so, and you kind of alluded to this a little bit in your last answer, but what advice would you give to women who want to become school leaders and administrators?
Well, my advice would be to go for it. I mean, education today is a challenging career, but it is a career where you can have a powerful impact on the future. Being in a leadership position enables you to reach so many people, so many children. I would add though, that administration is a time demanding career. And to be successful, you have to be accessible. You have to be willing to spend the time necessary. And I'd say that's not only women, but men too. But the superintendent's position is one that really requires you to be on call 24/7. And you have to be prepared for that. You have to be able to take criticism, as I mentioned before. You can't wear your feelings on your shoulder. You'll be in a position where you need to make the right decision, but that's not necessarily always the most popular decision. So you're going to have critics. And you have to be able to deal with that. You can't sway according to what the popular decision is, or you won't have any stability in your own philosophy if you do that. And, you know, there's lots of tidbits, but I'll stop with that thought. With the last one is you have to keep a sense of humor and you have to be able to laugh at yourself. It's a vital survival tool to be able to laugh at yourself.
That's a great point, regardless of what we're doing in life, isn't it? You know, I think back to, before I was involved in the school system, just as John Q. Public, even as an attorney, then even later as a teacher, employed as a teacher for a while. You know, I don't think I ever fully understood, probably still don't, the demand there is on a school superintendent to run a school system. I got the best snapshot of that when I was on the school board. And I was just really had no idea until I was in that position how much a superintendent had to deal with day to day to, you know, keep that, you know, airplane in the air, so to speak, from takeoff to landing throughout the school year. And, it was just really, it gave me a whole different perspective of a superintendent after being, like I said, on a school board and see everything that they deal with. I don't think most people have any idea of the demand that's on a superintendent's shoulders. And, you know, to be able to do that job and do it as long as you've done, obviously you've done it very well. And that's just a huge accomplishment. And I know you probably hear a lot of that, you know, these days from people, but to be able to do what you've done for as long as you've done it and to do it well is just pretty phenomenal. So I thank you for that, just as John Q. Public in West Virginia, but certainly I've seen your work myself too, and I know how good you are. So.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Ray. The amount of time that you spend, a lot of people don't realize it. And I still, you know, today I even have people that will say to me, "Wow, I'll bet you're looking forward to summer vacation, having all that time off." You know, it's amazing that sometimes the lack of understanding.
Your longevity as superintendent, how has that helped you accomplish goals for the students and teachers of Mercer County? Because, you know, a lot of times superintendents, you know, I see contracts for 1 year sometimes, and maybe the superintendents in 1 year and gone the next. Some maybe have, you know, a few years, but you've had obviously a longevity that's unmatched, you know, in West Virginia. And how has that longevity helped you accomplish the goals that you've wanted to reach for both students and teachers in Mercer County?
Well, I think I was able to accomplish a lot of long-term projects for Mercer County. For example, many, many years ago, we envisioned a building program for our county. And there are short-term ways to be able to do that. You can pass bond issues. In this county, it's almost impossible, if not impossible, to pass a bond issue. But through planning that program and being able to go back and keep that in mind, keep the sequence in mind and bring projects back year after year to the school building authority, we've been able to build, at first I thought it was six, but actually I recounted, we've built seven new schools since I've been superintendent and three large additions. And we just received funding for our eighth new school. And we were able to do this without increasing the tax burden on Mercer County residents. We utilized SBA grants, but we also saved money back in from our levy funds and from county funds every year so that we could put a match up. And I think that helped. Some of the projects, we would go back to the school building authority for three times before we were funded, but it enabled us to have that consistent message. You know, I was there, we didn't change direction, and I was able to keep the board with me in the direction we were going on building those schools. So I think that has really helped our building program, and we certainly needed it. We had a lot of old decrepit buildings in the county. I think longevity also helps you to establish traditions for your school system. And I think it also helps you to affect long-standing change. And by that, you know, we all know that we can put some new program in place and we can think that it's great, but if you don't have that continual push for it, that it can go by the wayside. And by having the same person in the leadership position, then that keeps that program up front. So it builds it into the system rather than you have a continual change. And I think that has helped our staff to be calmer about changes as they come along, because I think they can feel like we've been able to work through them. We'll take our time and work through them. So I think, or at least I hope that me being around for so long has helped to make some of those things happen.
Well, I think so. And I think that, you know, some of the things that you're saying, you know, people have expectations and they have anxiety. And when there's a real solid, consistent operation going on, it gives people a sense of security. And I think the longevity you've had has enabled you, as you've mentioned, to establish, you know, tradition, establish expectations, clear expectations, I would assume, you know, as time went on, which you may have, you know, modified over the years, but you've got that wide range of experience to draw from that there's probably not much that you haven't seen, you know, come down the pike. And the other thing on your buildings, which is not only phenomenal in and of itself, I would venture a guess that you've seen a pretty big transition of the tax base there in Mercer County over the longevity of your career. I mean, you know, has that changed substantially over the longevity of your career, or the money that, you know, that's generated for the school system?
It has. It's changed a lot. And the demographics of our county has changed a lot over the time that I've been superintendent. We are now one of the poorest for free and reduced lunches. We have one of the highest rates in the state percentage wise. And it wasn't, I mean, we were never one of the richest counties, but the county has changed a lot in that direction. A lot of needs in this county now.
Well, and the foresight that you had to put money back, so to speak, for lack of a better term, but to put it in a capital improvement fund, or however you were able to build some money up to match. I mean, that was a critical factor, I'm sure, when you went to the SBA meetings. And I can't imagine how many trips you've made, but obviously you've been successful. But you mentioned that you've had, you know, sometimes you had to go back and give it another shot and stuff. So we could probably do a whole episode on how to approach the SBA as many times that you've been there, done that, so to speak. But good for you. That's always a sign too of being able to keep up with the, you know, the technology for the students, and just, you know, like the safety issues are a big thing, I know, in school construction nowadays too, to make sure all those things are covered. So what would you, and this might be even the toughest question of them all, what would you consider to be your crowning achievement during your career?
You know, that is a tough question. And I think that in the past few years, and this, I was a math major, so this goes hand in hand with that. I think we've worked really hard on our math achievement of our students, and they have made great progress. So I believe that has really an achievement that certainly doesn't belong to me, but belongs to the county and our students and our staff. But I'm very proud of that. I believe that we have an excellent reputation throughout the state, not only for the opportunities we give our students, but for the opportunities that we give our staff. And all of these are areas where our folks have worked together very hard. And so I guess I'm changing your question a little bit. I'm saying Mercer County's crowning achievements. I'm not going to say that any of them are my crowning achievement, but I think as far as the county is concerned, our reputation in the state, specifically the progress we've made with math achievement over the years, I would point those two out.
Well, it sounds to me like the crowning achievement is hard work, and that's definitely a reflection of you. So even though you don't want to take credit for that, I think that there's a mirror there that your hard work ethic has reflected out on the county and has driven those things to happen. You know, people look to the leader in the county, the education leader being the superintendent, and, you know, that hard work that has been seen in Mercer County, and the reputation that it has, I would venture a guess, is a direct reflection of you and what you've put into the school system there. So as we kind of wrap up here, I wanted to kind of look forward and see what you think might be the biggest challenge or opportunity that public education will face in the next 20 years, and how do we prepare for that? And I'd say this question comes in the midst of a lot of change, you know, in education. So, but what do you see? What do you think might be the biggest challenge or opportunity that public education will face in the next 20 years? And how are we going to be prepared for that?
Well, I think that the biggest challenge is to transform public education into an educational experience that appeals to a larger group of parents. Through it was beginning, but COVID certainly accelerated the thought processes. The traditional public school calendar and setting doesn't work for all adults now. Doesn't work for all children. And many of our parents have non-traditional work schedules, or they just choose to participate in a setting that isn't a traditional school setting. So I think the public schools have got to respond to that. And I think that's going to create the biggest change in the next 20 years. Parents are looking for alternatives, and if public schools are going to survive, they've got to respond to it. I'll just say it that way, and I certainly hope that they do respond.
Well, you know, in a sense, probably every county could talk about certain changes that they experience year to year, and many of them may not even match up with their neighbors or somebody across the state. But the pandemic, I think, has kind of globalized the issues and things about changes in school systems, because, you know, there had to be a lot of uniformity and how that transpired in the last year. And it cast a very bright light on a lot of things, I think, in school systems statewide that, you know, everybody maybe didn't even recognize. So I can see where that the pandemic, as you mentioned, has been a really big factor in focusing everyone on changes that are coming. And of course, you know, there's been, as you mentioned, just the education experience is kind of in transition right now. And you know, the school calendar, parent schedules, all those factors definitely factoring into what we face in the future. You know, Dr. Akers, I think we could talk all day, but I wanted to thank you so much for being a part of today's program. And I'd like to just take a moment to thank you for your service to West Virginia and to Mercer County Schools. Your dedication and pursuit of excellence has benefited and touched so many people over the last 47 years. And I'm sure longer. I'd say you've been that way your entire life, but you're truly the gold standard for an educator. We wish you all the best as you enter the next chapter of your life, and we know that many wonderful adventures await you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much. You have a great day.
You too. And make sure to join us again next month. We'll be discussing some hot topics in education law in West Virginia. And until then, I'm Trey Marone, and this is the West Virginia EduCast. Thanks for taking a listen.